Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Tuesday, September 26th. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. Now let's look at some local headlines. Our first local news story today is entitled Norris Springs Fire Department Fundraiser Set for Saturday. The all-volunteer Norris Springs Fire Department will hold its fundraiser at the Fire Barn, located at 45 North Hawkeye Avenue in Norris Springs, on Saturday, September 30th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. This event will feature a free will donation, lunch, a bake sale, silent auction, and indoor and outdoor vendors. 10% of all vendor sales will be donated back to the fire department. Money raised will be used for trainings and safety equipment for the firefighters. Sarah Avery is a fire wife with years of experience running the gamut from worrying at home to planning fundraisers. I'm always asking folks to donate big for safety equipment so Josh can come home, she says. The silent auction is packed with items from local businesses and services. With over 100 items, Avery is sure there's something for anyone. This is one of the ways we keep our finances up and running. But more importantly, it's how we connect as a community, said Avery. Our next local story has a headline that reads, Central Garden's Annual Fiesta is Colorful Fun. Central Gardens in Clear Lake is a destination on its own, but on Sunday, things really livened up with the annual fiesta, a celebration of Latin culture. Located at 800 2nd Avenue North in Clear Lake, the garden is lovingly cared for by volunteers and staff. The seasonal displays are magnificent on their own, but paired with the bright colors of the Latin tradition, it becomes something out of a fairy tale. The grounds were packed with activities for the family, as well as cultural food tasting and even food trucks for extra big appetites. On the patio, dance troupes swung their flamboyant skirts in time to the music and the cheers of onlookers. Kids played noisily with parents as they made giant bubbles with rope, fought legendary battles with balloon swords, and took whacks at the piñata filled with candy. Our next local headline reads, Mason City Labor Temple opens on State Street. The Mason City Labor Temple has opened its doors at its new location. Located at 124 West State Street in Mason City, the building has been renovated with offices, conference rooms, a kitchen, and other necessary amenities. The former location is at 510 North Pennsylvania Avenue in Mason City, and it has been sold. Charlie Wishman, president of the Iowa Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO, said, "This is a place for working people, not just union people." Executive director of the Hawkeye Area Labor Council, Rick Moyle, agrees. The Hawkeye Area Labor Council represents 26 counties, including Benton, Blackhawk, Bremer, Buchanan, Butler, Cedar, Cerro Gordo, Chickasaw, Delaware, Floyd, Franklin, Grundy, Hancock, Hardin, Howard, Iowa, Johnson, Jones, Lynn, Marshall, Mitchell, Tama, Washington, Winnebago, Worth, and Wright. We've got about 30 or 40 members just in the Mason City area. The building isn't just for meetings, though. We hold trainings, negotiations, and apprentice events. It's nice to have a pleasing place to come to, said Moyle. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers No. 288 was represented by marketing developer Richie Kurtenbach. Kurtenbach said the new location is an excellent development for the Labor Council. A lot of us work out of Waterloo, and it's nice to have this beautiful building here for Mason City when we come up. Moyle says that for now, the council is enjoying a bright, updated space, but eventually will rent the building to the public during times the council isn't using it. It's a nice, centrally located place with plenty of room. Once we're ready to rent it out, there will be some nice events here, he said. Our next local story has a headline that reads, 2023 Homecoming at Mason City, Riverhawks on the Road. Homecoming is in full swing at Mason City Community Schools, and the theme chosen by the class of 2024, Riverhawks on the Road, pays tribute to showing Riverhawks pride in Mason City and beyond. The school's homecoming court is made up of seniors Grace Birding, Octavio Padilla Rico, Reggie Spots, Lannon Portis, Mercedes Estrada, Braden Miller, Isabel Heinzerling, J.P. Miles, Ishnur Carr, Reed Kruger, Casey Van Syok, and Justin Yaramadi. The school's jam-packed schedule for homecoming week sees the Riverhawks hosting and traveling to a wide swath of events. Saturday and Sunday saw high school students decorate the halls with corresponding U.S. locations, seniors as New York City, juniors as Los Angeles, sophomores as Chicago, and freshmen as Miami. On Sunday at the stadium, freshmen faced off against sophomores, and juniors took on seniors in Powder Puff Ultimate Football. On Monday, the junior varsity and varsity girls and boys cross-country teams traveled to Algona for an invitational meet, and Riverhawks girls rugby faced Cedar Rapids Washington and Central Springs at the Waverly Soccer Complex. Monday's theme for the day was See America, with students encouraged to dress in a patriotic theme featuring red, white, and blue. Tacky outfits were encouraged for Tourist Tuesday. Tuesday will also see the varsity boys golf team traveling to Des Moines for the Iowa Alliance Conference Invitational, while the girls' swimming and diving teams travel to meet in Marshalltown. Starting at 4:45 p.m., junior varsity and JV2 volleyball will host Des Moines Hoover, JV in the high school gym, and JV2 in the field house, followed by the varsity game at 7:15 p.m. More creative costumes will be displayed Wednesday for Barbie and Ken Day, and Thursday will be dress how you would be going out on a Friday night. On Thursday, the junior varsity boys golf team will travel to Marshalltown for the Iowa Alliance Invitational, and students from the Model UN will participate at the regional conference at North Iowa Area Community College. Students and staff will don their Riverhawks gear for the big day Friday, which will kick off with the homecoming court and football team's tour of schools, followed at 1 p.m. by the pep assembly and coronation in the Riverhawks gym. The parade down State Street is scheduled to begin at 2:15 p.m., culminating at 2:45 p.m. with a community pep rally at Principal Pavilion. The Riverhawks will face the Waterloo East Trojans at Mason City High School Stadium. The ninth grade game kicks off at 5:30 p.m., followed by the varsity game at 7:30 p.m. Saturday will see all cross-country runners traveling to Waverly for a meet, while the swimming and diving teams head to Cedar Falls. The homecoming dance for students will be held at the Mason City High School FEMA room from 8 to 11 p.m. Information for all Riverhawks events can be found on the district's online calendar, and information regarding Riverhawks athletics will be updated by the district on a new Facebook page Mason City Riverhawks Athletics. Our next local story has a headline that reads, Mason City Man Accused of Sexual Abuse at Assisted Living Facility. A North Iowa man is facing felony charges after police say he sexually abused a resident at his place of employment. 45-year-old Mario Rico Peter Henrick of Mason City pleaded not guilty on Friday to two third-degree sex abuse charges stemming from an incident that allegedly took place across 2 days in July. According to documents, Henrick was an employee of a Mason City assisted living facility when he entered the room of a resident on two occasions. Both days, he removed the person's clothing and performed a sex act. The resident suffers from a brain injury and therefore could not consent to the act. Trial is set for 1:30 p.m. Tuesday, November 28th. Our next local headline reads, Latham announces run for Mason City at-large council seat. Tim Latham has announced via Facebook that he is running for the open at-large city council seat left vacant by the death of Tom Toma. According to his post, Latham is motivated to forge a Mason City that is safe, welcoming, and flourishing for all families, focusing on enriching the lives of every resident. Latham is a longtime Mason City businessman and former county supervisor. Tim's extensive experience in leadership roles and his intimate knowledge of the business landscape allow him to champion sustainable development, economic progress, and enhance living standards for everyone in the community, the announcement reads. Tim Latham aspires to build a more vibrant, innovative, and inclusive Mason City. He is eager to unite the community, engage in meaningful conversations, and collaborate to devise solutions that will drive the progress and success of Mason City and its people. Our next local headline reads, Iowa Works to host weekly hiring events. The Iowa Works Mason City office hosts weekly events on Tuesday in the Job Center to connect job-ready candidates with area employers who are hiring. Taking place on Tuesdays, the events focus on making these connections. Employers from the local area participate, and all interested applicants are encouraged to attend. There's never been a greater time to re-enter the workforce, and these weekly hiring events will help showcase the wide variety of positions available in our area, said Sarah Cook, business engagement consultant for Iowa Workforce Development within the Iowa Works Mason City Center. Our weekly hiring events are often the first step to re-employment, or even new careers in high-demand fields. Iowa Works stands ready to help any job seeker find the connection they need to get started. And at today's Iowa Works weekly hiring event, it will be held from 9 to noon today. And featured employers include Masterson Staffing Solutions of Charles City Branch, Pure Prairie Poultry Incorporated, Charles City Masterson Staffing Solutions, $19 to $21 hour poultry processing, packaging, first shift, temp to hire long-term jobs, get paid weekly. For more information on the event, you can contact Iowa Works at 641-422-1524 or follow them on Facebook at Iowa Works Mason City. Iowa Works centers are a one-stop shop for career exploration and events, labor market information, and one-on-one assistance to help Iowans find their next career. And now turning to some statewide headlines. This one reads, Iowa gets much-needed rain. The dateline is Des Moines. a large swath of parched fields in Iowa received some much-needed rain last week, according to Iowa Crop Progress and Condition Report, released by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service. That rain reduced the days suitable for field work to 5.3 during the week ending Sunday. Field activities last week were mainly harvesting corn and soybeans. Topsoil moisture condition rated 27% very short, 46% short, 26% adequate, and 1% surplus. Subsoil moisture condition rated 35% very short, 44% short, 20% adequate, and 1% surplus. Corn maturity reached 83% this week, 9 days ahead of last year, and 12 days ahead of the 5-year average. Corn harvested for grain reached 9% statewide, 6 days ahead of last year, and 4 days ahead of the average. Moisture content of field corn being harvested for grain was at 21%. Corn condition improved slightly to 50% good to excellent. Soybeans coloring or beyond reached 95%, roughly 1 week ahead of both last year and the average. Soybeans dropping leaves was 75% this week, 6 days ahead of last year and 5 days ahead of normal. Soybeans harvested reached 11%, 3 days ahead of last year and 1 day ahead of normal. Soybean condition remained steady at 47% good to excellent. Pasture conditions rated 17% good to excellent. Livestock conditions have not changed much from last week, with concerns of hay being in short supply for next year. In a welcome shift, Iowa stations reported beneficial rainfall over the reporting period, with swaths of 2 to 3 inch above normal totals from southwest to northeast, according to Justin Gleason, state climatologist with the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. Southeast stations reported deficits above 0.5 inch. Temperatures were also unseasonably warm statewide, with the weekly average coming in at 66.4 degrees, 7.2 degrees above normal. Weekly precipitation totals range from 0.02 inches in Burlington in Des Moines County to 5.4 inches in Ionia in Chickasaw County. The statewide weekly average precipitation was 1.09 inches, while the normal is 0.86 inches. Lamoni in Decatur County reported the week's high temperature of 89 degrees on the 19th, 12 degrees above normal. Elkader in Clinton County reported the week's low temperature of 37 degrees on the 19th, 10 degrees below normal. Our next local headline, or statewide headline rather, reads, State Panel Approves Final Recommendations on Cutting, Consolidating State Boards and Commissions. A panel tasked with reviewing Iowa's board and commissions reversed its recommendation to remove some boards in its final report after Iowans expressed concerns over a potential loss of federal funding and public services. The Boards and Commissions Review Committee unanimously approved its final recommendations during its final meeting on Monday, proposing to eliminate or consolidate 111 of Iowa's boards and commissions, leaving 145 in place. The recommendations will need to be approved by the Republican-controlled legislature in next year's legislative session and signed into law by Governor Kim Reynolds before taking effect. The committee was created in a large state government reorganization law Reynolds signed this year, which also shrunk the number of cabinet-level state agencies and eliminated dozens of unfilled state jobs. According to a draft report, the final recommendations left intact some boards that were previously slated for elimination, after stakeholders warned during a September 5th public hearing that their loss would have jeopardized millions in federal funding, including the Commission on Volunteer Service and the Midwest Higher Education Compact. The panel recommended reducing the Volunteer Commission's membership from 19 to the minimum number required by federal law. Rather than being eliminated, the state's Board of Athletic Training would be merged with the Board of Chiropractic, Board of Massage Therapy, and Board of Physical and Occupational Therapy. Athletic trainers said during the public hearing that losing licensing for the profession would disincentivize qualified trainers from working in the state and allow unqualified people to work as athletic trainers. Iowa's Commission on Deaf Services, which deaf residents said during the hearing was vital to the deaf community, would be merged with a council that provides hearing aid support rather than placed under the Human Rights Board. Based on feedback we heard from the deaf community, we concluded that this commission is really different from all the others, and it's about providing a fairly unique set of services to deaf Iowans that are required by the particular nature of their disability, said David Faith, a deputy attorney general and committee member. A number of other population-specific boards, commissions on African Americans, Latinos, Asian and Pacific Islanders, Native Americans, people with disabilities, and women, were recommended to be rolled into the Human Rights Board. The board also reversed its recommendations to eliminate the Board of Nursing Home Administrators, the Youth Advisory Council, and the Commission on Uniform State Laws, recommending they all continue as is. The committee maintained its recommendation to eliminate dozens of other boards, including the Boiler and Pressure Vessel Board, Elevator Inspection Board, Board of Dietetics, Council on Homelessness, and Board of Examination of Shorthand Reporters. The duties of many boards recommended for elimination can be assumed by the state agency overseeing them, the report says, while others rarely meet or were created for a purpose that is no longer relevant. The committee will release its final report by Wednesday, Paulson said. The committee also maintained its general recommendations, including creating an ongoing review process, eliminating the requirement that boards be gender balanced, and paying members of certain boards a yearly stipend. Under the proposal, state officials would review all boards and commissions on a four-year basis. The committee also recommended boards have an automatic sunset period of 2 to 4 years, unless they are extended. The panel proposed paying the members of Iowa's Board of Regents, Board of Education, and Council on Health and Human Services $10,000 annually. Members of Iowa's Transportation Commission, Telecommunication and Technology Commission, and Racing and Gaming Commission are currently the only paid positions, and the members are paid $10,000 to $12,000 a year. The draft report also recommends eliminating meeting frequency requirements and allowing boards more freedom to meet over video conferencing platforms like Zoom, a process the committee hopes will increase public participation. The committee's chair, Department of Management Director Craig Paulson, said during Monday's meeting he thought the process worked well, and the committee used feedback from Iowans to revise its recommendations. Paulson said the committee reached out to as many boards and commissions as possible, and it received feedback from 85% of the state's boards. The committee also heard from dozens of Iowans at the September 6 public hearing and received more than 1,000 comments to an email that was used for feedback, Paulson said. I think the process we used worked well, and we began an important conversation in state government, Paulson said. We researched and could not find a single other instance in our state's history where there's been a global conversation about boards and commissions, he said. He also encouraged Iowans who still have concerns to reach out to lawmakers who will decide on the recommendations during the 2024 legislative session, which starts in January. Iowa Senator Tony Bisignano, a Democrat from Des Moines, said during Monday's meeting he hopes the final product does not diminish the ability of everyday Iowans to be part of their state government. He said the process of reviewing and narrowing the boards is important, but he said they can serve to get people interested in the processes of state government and allow them to contribute their expertise. We're drilling down to, is it really important? Is it not really important? Do they meet enough? Do they not meet enough? He said. The idea is it's bringing new faces, new voices, new people into Iowa's operation. And that's what I want to keep in mind. And you are listening to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Tuesday, September 26th on IRIS, Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. First, we remember Gary Lawrence Paulson. Gary Lawrence Paulson, age 82, of Mason City, passed away on Saturday, September 23rd, at Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center. A funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, September 30th, at Wesley United Methodist Church, located at 1405 South Pennsylvania Avenue, with Pastor Nadine Alunga officiating. The family requests that those attending dress in casual clothing. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. on Friday, September 29th at Major Erickson Funeral Home, located at 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue. Interment will be held in Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to Wesley United Methodist Church or the North Iowa Humane Society, located at 2700 South Birch Drive in Mason City. Online condolences may be left for the family at MajorErickSonFuneralHome.com. Gary was born on July 6, 1941, in Hampton, to Lawrence and Alona Mawson Paulson, the oldest of three children. He grew up on the family farm south of Mason City, where he lived and worked up to 2022. He always said that he started farming shortly after birth, doing the milking in his first year. He attended country school until the age of 14, when he went to Roosevelt Junior High. He graduated from Mason City High School in 1959. In November 1966, a friend introduced him to Sandra Tekeep. They married on August 6, 1967, and had four children. GP loved food, gadgets, John Deere tractors, country music, the old kind, not the new stuff, NASCAR racing, birding, watching traffic on the avenue, especially the blue light specials, and trains. His dream was to win the lottery so he could buy his own train and drive it all around the U.S. He enjoyed chatting with folks and made friends wherever he went. If you weren't friends when he met you, you sure would be when you parted ways. He was a master joke teller and the joke collector, most of which aren't fit for print, and had a laugh that the neighbors could hear a mile away. Fall was his favorite time of year because he could spend his days driving his big John Deere tractor around getting the crops out. GP is survived by his wife of more than 56 years, Sandy, children Stephanie Paulson, Jennifer Thorson, and her son Nebraska. Stephen Paulson and his children Addison, Cooper, and Maddox, and Brian Paulson and his children Maverick and Abigail Paulson, Nick Hitton, and Logan Campbell, his cat Betsy, sister-in-law Mary Paulson, brother-in-law Burton Tekip Jr., brother-in-law Michael Tekip, and numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. He was preceded in death by his father, Lawrence, his mother, Ilona, brother John, sister Janet Carlson, father and mother-in-law, Bud and Dorothy Tekip, and his grandparents. Arrangements are with Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory, located at 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue in Mason City. Next, we remember Mary D. Waite. Born February 11, 1929, Mary D. Waite, age 94, of Garner, died Wednesday, September 20th, in Forest City. A funeral service will be held at 10:30 a.m., Saturday, September 30th, at St. Boniface Catholic Church in Garner. Burial will be in the church cemetery. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to services at the church. Cataldo Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. In lieu of flowers, please make a memorial donation to one of your favorite charities or the National Audubon Society at audubon.org. Reading is fundamental at riff.org or the Parkinson's Foundation at parkinsons.org in Mary's name. Next, we remember Margaret Porrow. Margaret, or Jean as she was known, Badker Porrow, passed away peacefully with family at her side. She was born on August 1, 1933 in Mason City, to William Kenneth and Lena Marie Thomas Badker. She graduated from Thornton High School and married Pete J. Porrow Jr. at St. John's Episcopal Church in Mason City. To this union, three children were born, who were all baptized and educated through the church. Pete and Jean also renewed their wedding vows during a church service years later. Jean's career included Plum Supply in Mason City and Viking Pump Hudale Industries in Cedar Falls, where she later retired after 26 years of employment. Pete and Jean enjoyed being residents of Mason City, Iowa City, Cedar Falls, Waterloo, and then Rhinebeck, where they lived next to their daughter Dawn for over 30 years. At the time of Pete's passing, they had been married 67 years, and Jean then resided with daughter Kelly in Hanlontown. After she suffered a broken hip, she was relocated to Lake Mills Care Center. It was this home in which she was able to make so many friendships with the administrators, caregivers, and even the bus drivers. They all loved Jean, and her children were very grateful for the care she received. One of Jean's loves was being in her kitchen. To say she was a gourmet chef was an understatement, and Mike follows her footsteps with a lot of talent in the kitchen. She loved the outdoors and nature, was an avid bird watcher, and was happy when putting her line in the trout stream or being in Ken and Kelly's boat. She was a great card and cribbage player and passed that love on to her family. She also enjoyed a good cold Budweiser. Up until the very end of her life, she showed true joy in visiting with her grand and great-grandchildren. They renewed her spirit. Jean was honored at her 90th birthday in August, where family and friends were able to celebrate her life. Preceding Jean in death was her husband Pete, exactly 3 years earlier to the date. Her parents, brothers Richard Badker, Jay Badker, and sister Karen Badker Keller, left to celebrate her with many happy memories are her son Mike of Forest City, daughters Dawn Larson of Cedar Falls, and Kelly Mark of Hanlontown, brother Thomas Badker, nephew Troy Badker, and nieces Julie Gorvin, Darla Madsen, and Michelle Leckvie, grandchildren Derek Hatchell, Josh Porrow, Ash Larson, Audra Heineman, Alec Larson, Amanda Porrow, Derek and Tyler Lohman, and great-grandchildren Kaylee Cooper and Kylie Larson, Reese Hatchell, Caden Poro, Graham and Emma Poro, Brooklyn, Lauren, and Marcus Heineman, and Max and Jet Larson. Jean would have wanted to include her grandpups, Baggy, Missy, and Machi. Jean's remains were entrusted to Iowa Cremation, and a family service will take place at St. John's Episcopal Church in Mason City during a columbarium service. Cheers to you, Grandma Jean, for a life well lived. Next, we remember Patricia Carney. Patricia Ann Rourke Carney passed away after a brief illness on August 30th at Ryan House Hospice of the Valley in Phoenix, Arizona, at 98 years young. A massive Christian burial will be held at 1 p.m. on Thursday, October 5th at Holy Family Church in New Hampton, with the Reverend Jim Gorand celebrating the Mass. Interment will be held at Calvary Cemetery in New Hampton. Friends may greet the family 2 hours prior to the Mass at the Holy Family Gathering Space at the church. Online condolences may be left at hugebackfuneralhome.com. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Holy Family Church in New Hampton, Our Lady of Mount Carmel Catholic Church in Lawler, or Ryan House Hospice of the Valley in Phoenix, Arizona. Patricia was born on July 6, 1925, to Leo James Rourke and Olivette Ann Clary Rourke. She grew up in Lawler and attended Our Lady of Mount Carmel Grade School in Lawler and graduated from Lawler High School as valedictorian of her class at the age of 16. Patricia played high school girls basketball 6-on-6 and was able to provide her children and grandchildren a few good pointers on how to shoot the basketball properly. She further pursued her education at Clark College, now Clark University, and the University of Virginia. On July 15, 1947, she was united in marriage to Gerald Francis Carney, son of Harry James Sr., and Lena Rehorse Carney at Our Lady of Mount Carmel Church in Lawler. Gerald was a U.S. naval officer, and since they were a military family, their life was one of worldwide moves, some adventurous, some difficult, some dangerous, but always loving. Their family was their biggest joy and consisted of Dr. Patrick Gerald Carney, Amy Lee Carney Sandell, and Brian Rourke Carney. Their children lived in a military lifestyle with zeal and brought much happiness into their parents' lives. Patricia was a musician and organist in her church in Lawler. While at Clark, she and classmate Lois Waltz performed dual pianos in concert and in the Dubuque community at various functions. When living in Virginia, she accompanied her lifelong friend Dorothy McCall, a coloratura soprano who performed in the Washington, D.C. area at many eventful occasions. In the Philippines, Patricia organized a choir, and she and Gerald began a tradition with a children's choir that dressed in green and formed like a Christmas tree with flashlights illuminating their faces in front of a huge Philippine lighted pine tree. This brought Christmas joy to all of those who were far away from home at the U.S. Naval Station in San Miguel, Philippines. Gerald retired from the Navy after 25 years, and after many, many moves throughout the U.S. and the world, Patricia and Gerald returned to New Hampton in 1964. Patricia was a member of Holy Family Parish, St. Joseph Center, the Rosary Society, Mercy Hospital Auxiliary, Chapter DLPEO Sisterhood, and American Legion Auxiliary. Patricia and Gerald loved playing golf and traveled to Scotland to play some of the famous golf courses there. They loved to entertain and were part of a large bridge club in New Hampton and helped with many parties at the New Hampton Golf and Country Club. In the early 1980s, they started to go to Arizona in the winter months, where Amy and Brian lived. Patricia loved nice clothes and could outshop anyone who tried to challenge her. She loved her family deeply. She attended all of her 7 grandchildren's high school graduations in Iowa and Arizona, and 6 grandchildren's weddings that have taken place in Iowa, California, and Arizona. Her Catholic faith was a mainstay for her. She was extremely proud of the fact that a baptismal gown that was made by her mother, Olivette Rourke, in 1951, has been worn by all 21 of her children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. In the years before Gerald's death in May 2014, Patricia was a caregiver for him. After moving from New Hampton to Clear Lake in 2015, Patricia then moved to La Siena Senior Living in Phoenix in 2019. Surviving Patricia are 2 sons, Dr. Patrick Carney of Clear Lake, Brian Carney of Phoenix, Arizona, 1 daughter, Amy Sandell of Chandler, Arizona, as well as 7 grandchildren, Megan Blackwood, Nate Carney, Chris Carney, Carly Lepore, Jeff Sandell, Bronte Carney, Peyton Disbro, and 11 great-grandchildren, Hannah and Stella Blackwood, Hudson, Finn, and Lakin Carney, Colton, Harper, and Chase Carney, Adeline and Camille Lepore, and Max Sandell, along with Jacob and Alex Buggy. Patricia was very close to her Carney outlaw, Wayne Snyder. Patricia was preceded in death by her husband, Gerald, and her parents. Next, we remember Donovan Cook. Donovan D. Cook, age 91, of Clear Lake, passed away peacefully on Wednesday, September 13th at Mercy One Hospital of Mason City. Donovan has chosen to donate his remains to Mayo Clinic of Rochester, Minnesota for future research. The family will hold a celebration of his life at a later date. Donovan was born November 16, 1931, the second child to Clarence and Sylvia Oswald Cook of Clear Lake. Upon Sylvia's passing, Don's father, Clarence Cook, married Ethel Levisay of Clear Lake. Together, they raised Don and his older brother, Daryl Cook. Growing up in Clear Lake, Don played sports, including football and baseball. He graduated from Clear Lake High School in 1949. After graduation, he joined the U.S. Air Force, stationed at Travis Air Force Base in California. Don married Dixie L. Taylor of Mason City in 1952 at Zion Lutheran Church in Clear Lake, and they enjoyed 71 years together. Don worked at IBM for over 32 years in many locations around the U.S., including Colorado Springs, Grand Forks and Minot, North Dakota, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and Irving, Texas. He worked at various positions within the company, starting as a typewriter repairman and finishing in IBM large computer systems. Don enjoyed golf, and over the years he was a member at various clubs around the country, including Las Colinas Country Club of Irving, Texas. He achieved 4 hole-in-ones over his lifetime. While in Texas, he and Dixie worked at several PGA-sanctioned events, including the Byron Nelson Golf Classic. Don is survived by his wife, Dixie, his 3 sons, Daniel Cook of Eden Prairie, Minnesota, Dennis Cook of Grand Forks, North Dakota, and Dale Cook of Centennial, Colorado, as well as 7 grandchildren and 12 great-grandchildren. Don was preceded in death by his parents, Sylvia Oswald Cook, Clarence and Ethel Cook, his brother Daryl Cook, and a baby sister. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel is in charge of arrangements. Next, we remember Sharon Eiler. Sharon E. Eiler was born in Norris Springs, the daughter of Thelmer and Doris Miller. She attended schools in Orchard, Norris Springs, and Osage. Sharon married Paul Keasley, and they later divorced. She lived in Manly, where she worked as a nurse's aide and housekeeping at Manly Care Center. Sharon married Fred Eiler on June 2, 1983, in Mason City. He preceded her in death in May 1990. Sharon loved helping people, volunteering, and attending church. Sharon passed away on Tuesday, September 19th at Grand Givante in Ackley at the age of 80. She is preceded in death by her parents, husband, a grandson, Lucas Litzgau, and two brothers, David Miller and Thelmer Miller. Sharon is survived by a son, Joe Kisley, of St. Ansgar, two daughters, Donita Neuroth of Waterloo and Elizabeth Litzkow of Waterloo, 14 grandchildren, 16 great-grandchildren, as well as two brothers, Ronald Miller of Steamboat Rock and Dwayne Miller of Temple, Texas, and three sisters, Diane Bauer of Gallatin Gateway, Montana, Sue Ellen Badner of Decatur, Alabama, and Darlene Parrott of Mesa, Arizona. A visitation will be held on Wednesday, September 27th from 11 to 1 p.m. at the Parrott and Wood Chapel of Memories located at 965 Home Plaza. Funeral services will be held Wednesday, September 27th at 1 p.m. at the funeral home. Burial will be Thursday, September 28th at Clear Lake Township Cemetery in Ventura. Arrangements are with Parrott and Wood Chapel of Memories. Condolences may be left at parrottandwoodsfh.com. Next, we remember Jerry Howe. Jerry George Howe, age 76, of Mankato, formerly of Manly, passed away Tuesday, September 19th at Brookdale Senior Living in Mankato. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, September 29th at Tracy United Methodist Church. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, September 28th at the Tracy Area Funeral Home. Visitation will continue 1 hour prior to the service at the church on Friday. Interment will be in the Tracy City Cemetery. Online condolences may be sent to StevensFuneralService.com. Stevens Funeral Service, Tracy Area Funeral Home, is assisting the family with arrangements. Jerry George Howe was born on October 11, 1946, to Clarence and Dorothy Shuck Howe in Tracy, Minnesota. He was baptized and confirmed at the Lutheran Church in Tracy and graduated from Tracy High School. Jerry enlisted in the U.S. Air Force from 1964 to 1969 and was stationed at Chicksands, Bedfordshire, United Kingdom. Following his service, he settled in Tracy, where he worked on the railroad. He was united in marriage to Linda Strand on August 7, 1971. The couple moved to Esterville and later settled in Manly, where Jerry started working for the Postal Service. Jerry was a member of the American Legion and the Bethel United Methodist Church in Manly. He enjoyed golfing and riding his motorcycle. Jerry loved Minnesota sports, especially the Twins, Gophers, and Vikings. Jerry is survived by his daughter, Sarah Rooley of Eagle Lake, and grandchildren, Corinna, Michaela, and Inara Rooley of Eagle Lake. He is preceded in death by his wife, Linda, and his parents. Next, we remember Nada Oltrogue. Nada Stewart Oltrogue, age 81, of Clear Lake, died July 1st at home following a brief illness. A memorial party in her honor will be Saturday, September 30th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Clear Lake Yacht Club, located at 103 Main Avenue. Nada was born August 21st in either 1941 or 42, depending on when you asked her. For the first half of her life, she professed her birth year as 1942, until she let it slip one day that she was baptized on Pearl Harbor Day, December 7, 1941. What a difference does a year make? Beats us, but from then on, an epic family joke was born that would endure until her death. She was the firstborn child of Catherine and Clifford Faust of Waterloo, the city where she grew up, and created many fond memories at their home on Fowler Street with younger brother Michael. She was a proud graduate of the 1959 class of Waterloo East High School. Following graduation, Nada met Wayne Altrage, and they married in April 1961. The couple made their home in the married student barracks at the University of Iowa, while Wayne completed law school. In July 1962, the couple welcomed son Stuart. The following summer, Wayne accepted a position with a law firm in Clear Lake, and the town became their permanent home. From this point, Nada stayed at home to devote time to her family. They welcomed daughter Susan in November 1963. A third child, Sarah, joined the family in November 1971. Nada was active in the Clear Lake community from the start, often hosting League of Women Voter meetings and former lifelong friendships through her church, Bridge Club, Clear Lake's Arts Council, and TTT. She was especially proud of singing in a production of Handel's Messiah and could be heard humming it off and on for years. Later in life, she kept active, helping with the Clear Lake Ventura Food Pantry. A voracious reader, Nada was well known to the Clear Lake Public Library staff, who kept her phone number on speed dial when new books became available. In the 1980s, Nada returned to the working world by providing holiday sales and gift wrapping support for her beloved Yonkers. To her credit, Nada could fulfill entire Christmas wish lists with just one stop at Yonkers, while her family marveled at the amount of Yonkers brand boxes unwrapped each year, many of which survive today. From there, she worked for Midwest Siding and Windows before joining Northern Trails Area Education Agency. In 1995, she recreated her professional career by becoming a salesperson for Yellow Book, a job that suited both her social and persuasive skills. In 1996, she was named to the President's Club for achieving the top 10% in sales company-wide and treated to an all-expense-paid cruise to the Bahamas. She remained with Yellow Book, until her retirement in 2007. She enjoyed traveling whenever the opportunity arose, visiting Italy, Canada, Mexico, and many U.S. states. She also delighted in spending time with her friends and family, particularly her granddaughter, Emily, for whom she wholeheartedly and enthusiastically cheered during hockey games and sailboat races, school, and other life events as her number one fan. She loved Clear Lake, spending time on the water, summer afternoons reading and chatting with neighbors on her front porch, rooting for the Iowa Hawkeyes and getting her hair done with epic dedication. Nada is greatly missed by her children, Stuart Altrage, Susan Altrage, and Sarah Altrage, granddaughter Emily Hagerode, and great-grandson Waylon, brother Michael Faust, niece Terry Pereira and family, nephew Chris Faust and family, many cherished cousins, and her faithful dog, Riley. She is predeceased by her parents. In accordance with her wishes, memorial contributions may be made to the Clear Lake Public Library or the Clear Lake Sailing Center. And that concludes today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Tuesday, September 26th. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening, and have a great Tuesday. Thank you.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. Shortly after modern humans arrived in Europe, the Neanderthals disappeared, and scientists think we had something to do with it. Neanderthals, or their direct ancestors, migrated out of Africa and into the Middle East and Europe around 250,000 years ago. Soon, they were well adapted to the environment. Large eyes helped them see in the longer nights and darker winters. Stout bodies helped them retain heat and handle large prey, and provided space for the large liver and kidneys needed for a diet heavy in protein. Their brains were as big as ours, but spent processing power on their greater visual and motor abilities. This may not have allowed them to develop higher communication or conceptual thinking to match ours, which may have been their downfall. Modern humans arrived on the scene 45,000 years ago, less physically adapted, but more mentally adaptable. We had cooperative hunting methods superior to the Neanderthals, allowing us to outcompete them for food, and perhaps reducing the large herbivore populations that they depended on. We also had superior tools and weapons. When there were conflicts between the groups, as there have been among tribes throughout history, our superior technology probably allowed us to prevail. But we weren't only fighting. There must have been considerable interbreeding, since we can find 1-3% of the Neanderthal genome in modern man. Which means the Neanderthals never completely disappeared. A little bit of them is alive in us today. I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.